Hello and welcome back to the IMD Podcast Network. This week, an episode of our CEO Dialogue series. IMD's Jean-François Manzoni is speaking to Esther Baguette, the leader of Novonesis.
I'm very fortunate today to be in Copenhagen speaking with Esther Baguette, CEO of Novonesis. Novonesis is the new name as of January 2024 of a company formed through the merger of Novozymes and Christian Hansen, two Danish-based multinationals developing and selling biological solutions, meaning solutions that involve things like microbes, enzymes, proteins, and or various cultures. Now, these solutions help to address challenges and opportunities in more than 30 industries, including food and beverages, human health, household care, agriculture, technology, and energy. Novonesis introduces itself as a global company leading the area of biosolutions. Its purpose? We exist to better our world with biology. Some numbers from 2024, revenues of about 4 billion euros, EBITDA 36%, and a little bit over 10,000 employees. Current market capitalization on its way to 30 billion euros, which represents a very substantial price-earnings ratio, which of course suggests that the market believes Novonesis has a very brilliant future. Alongside this financial success, Novonesis is also receiving very strong accolade and a myriad distinctions for their sustainability-related practices and impact. And last, but proverbially not least, Novonesis has approximately 100,000 shareholders owning the publicly traded B shares. They also have A shares that are controlling a larger proportion of the vote and that are held by Novo Holdings, the organization that manages the Novo Nordisk Foundation's assets. Esther herself is Spanish. She joined Novozymes in February 2020, right at the start of the COVID crisis, after 25 years at Dow Chemical. Alongside her Novonesis position, she is a member of the supervisory board of AkzoNobel and the co-chair of the World Economic Forum's Alliance of CEO Climate Leaders. She's received a great many personal accolades, including among the more recent ones, being selected as a Time 100 Climate Leaders and among the Forbes 50 Sustainability Leaders. Esther, thank you for making the time to be with me today, and also thank you for inviting me into Novonesis' headquarters.
Most welcome and pleasure and delight you to have you here. Thank you for making the time too.
Let's start, Esther, with a basic question. Biological means involving living organisms, as opposed to chemistry, which deals with matter. What kind of living organisms does Novonesis work with?
We, as you so nicely described, we bring solutions that they are inspired with nature and made by nature. The living organisms that we have here at Novonesis are microbes, cultures, yeast, little tiny organisms that they produce the answers that already nature has known for billions of years how to provide to the needs of the society. But then we bring them upscale through technology, through science, through bioengineering, and that's how we make them available through our customers.
Now, these organisms can be used to develop solutions in a wide range of industries and applications. For example, food and beverages, mm-hmm. which represents about a third of your activities. Can you give us one or two examples of what a solution would be for the food and beverage industry?
Indeed. In food and beverages, our microbes, our enzymes, they enable dairy products. When you take a yogurt, okay. for example, when you eat a yogurt or cheese, that's a very, very, very high probability, very high one, that our cultures have been there giving the right functionalization, the right texture. Our enzymes have been there enabling the palatability. When you eat a high protein yogurt, it's extremely high probable that our cultures have been the ones using for the producing the yogurt itself, but then the enzymes to give the texture and the palatability to those high protein yogurts. When you eat the cheese, our cultures also are the ones that they transform milk
into cheese.
Let's talk baking. The bread that you use, it can have chemicals or texturizers or foaming agents, or it can be using our enzymes that will give the right formability, the right shape, the right lifetime extension, but also naturally. You talk about beverages, and you like having the beer, but also low alcohol beer or the right texture. our enzymes, our yeast, they help us to produce exactly in the way that Natura maybe would do it in a broad range, will give you exactly that microbe, that protein, that enzyme that is the one that you want for the final goods.
So that's food and beverage. Human health, a little bit more than 10% of your activities.
Human health, we bring here microbes and prebiotics that would enhance your gut health,
okay,
and give you with that also several levels of cognitive experience. By improving the way that we digest, not only we improve our health, but we sleep better. It moves into many, many different broad range of features, the ones that our solutions provide in.
Okay.
You will find us in supplements. So our cultures will be there on the supplements that you use. When you take probiotics, you will find us in infant formula, on bringing not the milk, powder milk, but that special oligosaccharides, those special probiotics, those special ingredients that they make the baby infant formula closer to human formula and more nutritional. You will find us in special proteins that they are used for plant-based ingredients, having the texture and the experience of almost meat, but fermented biologically at our home.
Household care, almost 20% of revenues.
I love the ta-ta-ta. We produce enzymes that enable you to wash your clothes at lower temperatures.
Okay.
At the same time, enable you compacting. Enzymes are tiny, petite, allowing also our customers and consumers not only energy savings for washing at lower temperatures, but savings on logistics, savings, lower plastic waste. They enable polymer replacement, microplastic replacement. We bring enzymes in household care. They break the stain naturally. And at the same time, and this is why they don't need high temperature. And at the same time, they're biodegradable because they're based on protein.
Okay. Maybe one last one, energy.
Yes. Only last year, our solutions enabled more than 60 million CO2 emission reduction. That's equivalent to replacing 30 million cars out of the road. That's a lot of cars.
Yeah.
Every year, they sell 2 million electrical vehicles. So our solutions, they contribute positively, but not only through bringing biofuels, replacing fossil, also by enabling beautiful feedstocks for animal nutrition. So we take the feedstocks, the biomass, we produce biofuels, and then the byproduct, it's high protein value added nutrients that go into animal feed. So it's biofuels and biofeedstocks for animal nutrition. It's feeding and fueling the world at the same time.
Now, you've already started touching on this, that a number of your solutions have to do with enabling healthier lives and producing better foods.
Mm-hmm.
But another part, and I think it's about 50-50, involves reducing chemical use and targeting climate neutral practices. So it's I guess, almost half is effectiveness and half is efficiency.
I love the way almost. You describe it. Our purpose is, we come to work every day, almost 11,000 colleagues, to better the world with biology. And how are we bettering the world? We're enabling healthier lives and we're enabling a healthier planet. 50% of our revenue is enabling healthier lives, healthier food, healthier agricultural, healthier animals that will also be feeding the world, probiotics. 50% of our solutions enable a healthier planet, detergents to wash at lower temperatures, biofuels, solutions that lead to high efficiency, lower chemical use, lower energy, lower CO2 emissions. It's pretty much a 50-50.
And so, on that basis, who do you think of as your competitors?
Oh,
are these other enzyme companies or are biochemical companies or chemical companies? Who's your competition?
I love that question because it's a critical question. Because if you look yourself as an enzyme supplier, if you look yourself as a culture supplier, you narrow the addressable market that
right.
you can reach. If you would see yourself as your competitor, other cultures providers or other enzymes providers. This is the way you win is only by almost taking it from one side to the
right.
other. The way that we win is by making the market bigger,
okay.
by making the addressable biosolutions bigger. I see as our competitor, specialty chemicals.
Okay.
That's a $1 trillion
right.
addressable market. Biosolutions, it's growing 5 times faster. We're growing in every single market we present, we're going 2-3 times faster than the market, but we only $60 billion market. And we're growing faster. We're not going to be, it's not that we're going to be replacing the 1 trillion chemicals, specialty chemicals market, but the capabilities and the technology to continue outgrow and to be a stronger enabler of the answers of the future, that readiness is there.
So you don't define yourself in terms of the input. You define yourself more in terms of the impact that you have and the solutions that you can produce and or substitute.
That's an excellent way of describing it.
I have a colleague who's been drilling this into my head. He says, companies talk too much about features and not enough about benefits. I guess you're...
We all benefit. This is also why we have 38% EBITDA margin, maybe, because we do provide value for our customers. We are between 1% and 5% of the cost of goods sold, of the products that our customers produce, but yet a big enabler of the value that they generate. This is why we're outgrowing all the markets that we present.
Now, we understand better what Novonesis does.
Good.
Let's dive deeper. So first, let's discuss briefly the merger that led to the creation of Novonesis. So we have two legacy companies, Novozymes and Christian Hansen, both partly owned by Novo Holdings. So that's a commonality, but they've been, at least as I understood, competing to some extent, at least over the years. So what led to the decision to merge these two companies at that time?
We were, and I say we because it feels like we today on across everything we do. We combined by creating Novonesis, two extraordinary companies that they were remarkably compatible, that together we have created something stronger than none of us could dream about.
Okay.
So Novozymes was the leading player on enzymes, and Christian Hansen was the leading player on cultures, on microbes.
Okay.
I talk about dairy solutions. We were both tiptoeing, but Christian Hansen definitely was a leading player in dairy, and Novozymes was selling a little bit of enzymes in dairy. Now together, now we make a wow effect to our customers. Now we can use the deep expertise of cultures, but coupled with an extraordinary library of enzymes, and now bring higher yield, high efficiency, higher boost, higher productivity. But not only that, high protein content, protective cultures to prevent mold formation. Now we can enable also a special functionalization that we could never do before. So we see it in a way of complementary,
right,
by bringing solutions that one had into a space that the other market was speaking and talking to the customers, but didn't have the tool. Is one had the red, the other one had the green, and now we can really paint because we were not having the capability to make all the colors and unleash the power of biosolutions.
So what I'm hearing is relatively little overlap, or at least less overlap than complementarity.
None overlap.
Okay.
None overlap at all. Okay. Actually, I mean, none overlap. I mean, we're extremely complementary in all the areas that we have been then going bolder and stronger to our customers.
And interestingly, when I was reading about this, when you look back at 2024, you do discuss cost savings, mm-hmm, so synergies on the cost side, but you also discuss, and in fact, a larger number of sales synergies.
Exactly. The driver, I mean, and we have done on the cost synergies.
Right.
We are already at 80%, only 6 months after the combination, the closure, we were already at 80% run rate of the cost synergies we said would deliver in 3 years. So we've done our homework very, very fast. Yes, on efficiency on the way that we are organized, but also on efficiencies on the way that we buy, on the way that we operate, on the way that we ship. Plenty of room of optimization that we capitalize very sharply. But the driver of this combination, yes, there is an efficiency on cost synergies, but the driver was growth.
Okay.
To be a better partner for your customers and that growth. And the growth is segment by segment, we better for our customers. And that's the growth synergies. An area that we enabled the synergies was in animal health, where after the combination, we had two arms, the legacy Christian Hansen with cultures, probiotics going into animal health, the legacy Novozymes through DSM Alliance going into animal. So it was two amazing solutions that our customers seek for, but played into different arms. That's why exactly why we bought our fair share of the Alliance to DSM. And now we are a true biosolutions player for our customers, and we can develop, grow for them. And there is one other component of the growth synergies, which you should not underestimate, which is the more boots on the ground effect, particularly on emerging geographies. We were both small companies.
Okay.
We're still small, now we're less small. And in emerging geographies, we see tremendous leverage of having more boots off the ground and capitalizing on streamlining the go-to-market channel by having more critical mass, by being a bigger company now with 11,000 employees.
Now, that works if the two organizations collaborate.
Yeah.
And so the agreement was announced in very late 2022, became official early 2024. So it means that you had about a year to not only clear regulatory hurdles, but also prepare.
14 months.
Voilà. And
we counted the hours.
And one of the things that you mentioned in your documentation is we worked on defining and starting to foster a shared company culture, blending the best of the two legacy companies. How did you go about doing that?
First, I'll tell you that where we are today and then explain you how we arrived there.
Okay.
Just to give you comfort that we are in a good place. The employee engagement of our organization today, of the close to 11,000 employees, it's an 8.5 of 10. That's when you ask somebody how happy you are, how much do you like working in this company, how proud do you are, how much you would recommend it to somebody else, how engaged do you feel with the strategy, how much do you trust your management, 8.5. It's extraordinary. Only with 16 months old. It's
and
amazing.
That's in spite, of course, of a year of integration, which probably created a fair amount of uncertainty and anxiety, right, for some.
And also a lot of hope, a lot of passion,
okay,
and a lot of pride. It's both. Of course, it has been a long journey, but we are in a really, really good place. We're not done. The worst thing you can do in an integration is ever celebrate success. The worst you can do in culture is ever celebrate success. You always have to be thinking and seeking what can go wrong, looking forward and putting the measurements in place. But now that I gave you hopefully comfort that we are in a good place, let me give some color to your beautiful question. What did you do in these amazing 14 months that you had before signature and closure? We ask close to a little bit more than 10,000 colleagues in that moment that were working in two different companies, what do you like about your company?
Okay.
What is important for you? We made it very clear we're going to a different home, but we ask everybody, what do you want to take with you? We also ask, not what you don't like, what would be okay for you to let go?
Okay.
Everybody chipped in. Everybody brought this very best. And then with that in place, and with also help of groups of anthropologists and experts on sociology, we digested those thoughts and we shape the home that we want to have.
Was there a fair amount of convergence?
Actually, I mean, we're combining two companies that they had were very similar also on the purpose.
Okay.
Through science, through technology, making the world a better place. Maybe one more with microbes, the other one with enzymes, maybe one more in dairy, maybe the other one more in household care. But the principles.
Quite compatible.
The values also, the legacy Danish companies, also easy to blend, much easier. To be in the place that we are, right, when you start with the good ingredients, that they are matchable and compatible. So we ask whether we want to be, we define the home, we change the name. Don't underestimate the
sure.
value that
of course. Because otherwise they would have been a winner and they would have been a loser.
Exactly. And this is the home from all of us.
Right.
And changing the name, we build it the house, we draw the house, we put a name to the house, we put the cultural commitment pillars of that house, and then we draw the breadcrumbs from the path from both companies to go there. Because yes, there are many similarities, but there are many differences too. And the path of going home, it was not the same. And we make it those breadcrumbs, those stones in the river. We spend a lot of time and energy on making sure that that path would be clear. And then in day one, we massively work on that. Massively work. We focus big time on two areas. Customer. Don't drop the ball, business continuity, and integration. It's very important when you're doing an integration whether you put the energy first. If you go too much on integration, you integrate it, but you lose the base.
Okay.
So for us, it was a conscious decision. We run. We have two amazing companies that they're going to be better. Let's not forget that they're amazing, and we keep them amazing. We continue to run. We deliver every month, every quarter, every day as we integrate. And communicating that very clear to the organization, that also help on how we'd move those steps. we were very clear also on the milestones.
Was there a trade-off between integrating? You could have, would you have been able to integrate in a harsher and quicker way, but then you might have lost on the customer side? So was there some managing the pace in order to have both at the same time?
Every day, every day.
But you had clarified the principles,
yes.
And the principles was, yes, there will be some inside-out focus on the integration, but we cannot lose the outside-in focus with the customer. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Is it interesting?
Yes, it is. Why? Very interesting. I guess because it is rare, I think, in combinations, that there is almost more focus on the sales synergies than on the cost synergies, especially in organizations that are operating, you know, kind of in similar markets. But I had not seen that many transactions and combinations where the focus was much more on 1 + 1 = 2 point something, as opposed to 1 + 1 = 1.8. Mm. So I found this really interesting. And I think what you just described now in terms of saying we really kept the customer focus. You know, I sometimes say people listen to what you say, but they also listen to what you don't say.
Ah, yeah. Mm. That's super important.
And so what I'm hearing is, you know, they listened to what we said and we made sure that we consistently repeated. It's
and we did it. Because the moment that you blink, right, and you do the opposite, then you lose it.
Right.
So you have to, and when there is a trade-off, you really have to honor it. Because if you blink it there, then everything, then it's taking the souffle out of the oven, right, too early.
Now, the market is gratifying Novo Nesis with a very high price earnings ratio, which of course means...
It's not very high. It's okay.
Which of course suggests that they're expecting a lot of growth. And you mentioned earlier already the addressable market, which of course is very large. So the potential for growth seems considerable. Now, you're already serving more than 30 industries. And you know that involves a certain amount of, I guess, complexity. This growth that you're going to keep driving for, will there be like one or two sort of killer apps, you know, things that represent large volume by themselves? Or does it continue to be a very diversified portfolio of a multitude of solutions?
It's biosolutions. And it's the answers, a stronger enabler of the answers of the future than today. And then to answer your question, I would say open a newspaper and tell me which one is going to win. Is it feeding the world? Is it feeding a global population? That we will need, that only protein demand is going to double within the decade. And that will be, yes, more chickens and more cows that we are there, but it will also be being more plant-based. It will also be more dairy. It will be many new solutions. We will all be there. It will be also decoupling the way that we produce with new technologies. Okay. It will be biofuels, but it also be the new ways on how we continue to create the building blocks of the way that we transform and the way that we produce. We are everywhere. And that's exactly how we invest. This is how we invest in R&D. Science is agnostic of the market. This is the beauty of this company. So there are three things that makes us special in this company. Truly, truly unique. Capability to connect and be close to our customers. We're present in more than 30 different markets. That versatility of markets gives us a natural edge. Resilience in a very volatile market.
Okay.
No matter what it, when
there's
something
a diversification
goes,
effect.
We will capture. Innovation, capability to translate those needs from society and from our customers into value-added answers. We have more than 100,000 strains in our libraries. We have the most advanced AI capabilities, digital tools, crystal, you name it. And then capability to scale. Listen to the market, connect those needs into bio-based solutions, and then bringing them back to scale.
Okay, so let me ask a follow-up question on this. Mm-hmm. Clearly 10,000 patents, over 100,000 microbial strains. That's an extraordinary potential asset. Most of the companies I work with would not be able to, A, keep track of all of these elements. You know, a lot of organizations say, if only we knew what we know. And B, I don't think they would be able to use and recombine them effectively and efficiently. What's the capacity or the capability within Novo Nesis that enable you guys to make the most of this very complex and also evolving library?
That's an extraordinary question, very smart, because having a library, and the way that you describe it, it's a library, it's not a pile of books. Maybe the way of answering the question is exactly that's what we have. We have a library of strains, not a pile of strains. They are structured, they are organized, they are traced, classified. We know exactly what we have through multiple level of dimensions.
Okay.
And then we use the most advanced AI technology to play with them. And also the most about capability. I mean, high throughput technology has been with us forever, but CRISP technology, the most advanced bioengineering capabilities to play with them. So it's actually, this is our not secret recipe of success, but that coupled with an extraordinary organization in R&D, that they master the science of biotechnology, by also with a very strong analytics, that's what makes us unique.
But so Novozymes and Christian Hansen were already quite good at managing.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there a lot of work to do to combine these two libraries, or are they still two libraries that somehow have
pathways? Well, one library is more for microbes and cultures, another one on strains.
Okay.
And on enzymes. So it is but extremely compatible. And the beauty here, it is not the libraries itself. It's how do you connect
right.
them to application to a need? How do you develop an enzyme that's going to break a protein, that's going to make the liver or starch and make the prebiotics, that those probiotics that you can also put at cultures will thrive? This is exactly the purpose of why we combine the two companies together.
And you've mentioned AI a few times, and you've also said quite publicly that it could be a game changer. In a number of organizations, there's also resistance to the deployment of AI, in part because people are concerned about the impact on their jobs and so on. So no such concerns with it.
We have been using AI for years,
okay.
Right? I mean, now everybody talks about AI, and I guess it's beautiful that it's getting democratized. And when we see it with ChatGPT, then we now it become more familiar, but AI has been a component
True.
Of how we
okay.
develop and engineer, and we bring proteins into solutions for our
okay.
customers since
So ever. Gen AI is new, but AI is not new for Novo.
Just to give you an example, 10 years ago, it took a protein is nothing else than a bunch of amino acids, right? But what defines the performance of the protein, it's the shape of the protein. That will make that enzyme eat the fat on your strain, depending on how the protein shape is. It will stick or not stick, break it or not break it. What defines the protein, you change an amino acid chain, we change one amino acid in a chain of hundreds of them, thousands of them, that gives two different protein surface shape. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that was 1 year of lab. Today with AI, 15 seconds, 30 seconds. Also, what AI brings us is to connect that protein shape into performance at the field. What AI also brings is how we ferment and bring them to scale, and we constantly improve it. And yes, AI also means how we interact with our customers, how we register, how we handle data. That also means, and maybe that's the space that you're saying, the resistance that it's
no,
in the,
but
in
the what way. What I'm hearing is we're going much faster. If I'm one of your scientists, I'm thinking if we can do things much, much faster than before, how long will it take for me not to be necessary anymore?
No, that's another question. The question is how much more many things I can do now.
Okay.
We're not cutting on R&D at all.
Okay.
It's simply we're improving our efficiency.
Okay.
That's why we can be present in 30 different markets. This is why we're growing more than market in okay. every single market that we're present. How do we do more with what we have? Not okay. how we do the same cheaper. This is not our question.
Okay.
It's how do we do more faster?
You have mentioned already several times the importance of the customer orientation, the mm-hmm. customer centricity. Almost 10 years ago, I actually had a number of discussions with Novozymes at the time, which was before your arrival.
Okay.
And I remember discussing some of their R&D efforts. And I don't think I'm saying anything disparaging when I say that at the time, on a number of occasions, they found that some of their product development efforts were more driven by technology and their idea of what was interesting than what the customers were requiring. So over the last 10 years, this organization and Christian Hansen have become a lot more customer-centric. Mm-hmm. How do you make technology, a technology company, more customer-centric?
We have invested significantly on weight on emerging geographies. We have decreased the gravitas of the core of headquarters. It's very difficult to sell if you don't have people in the region. Okay. Very difficult. If you don't have sellers, very difficult to sell. Very difficult to people in emerging geographies outside of headquarters to be able to make the right decisions if you don't empower them, if you don't give them the right level of delegation of authority. So it's not only putting more goods off the ground, we also have shift the power. To giving power to somebody, you have to take it from somebody else. We have increased the level of autonomy with certain guardrails of things that we still keep on the core. Strain development, it's core. But playing with existing solutions that you can formulate in a different way, go and do. You don't need to ask for permission. And suddenly we're growing double digit in emerging geographies for many years.
So it means that there's also more investment, not only in customer-facing people, but also in sort of development, not hardcore R, but application.
We call them application centers. Okay. We have made a powder lab in India where we play with our customers on how we develop detergent regionally. Suddenly we make them for soap bars in India. Suddenly we make new sachets for the local plier. We make the baking lab in Turkey. Suddenly we sell for flatbreads. Same enzymes, blend it in a different way. It's not the same doing a baguette than doing a flatbread. Suddenly because we're investing in capabilities in Latin America, we're massively growing household care and then also in industries there, simply by being close to our customers and playing in a different way. It's not that sophisticated, I'm afraid.
Well, so I think it's one of those, and we have many of them, of course, in management. It's relatively simple to understand, but quite hard to do.
You just have to be very persistent.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's not hard. It's just persistent.
Now, looking at climate change at a societal level, it is clear that society is not progressing at the pace at which we need to be progressing to maintain the temperature increase where we were hoping to maintain it. And yet, it would be possible using existing technologies to do much better. In fact, your teams believe that by 2030, wider use of biological solutions in selected areas could help reduce global emissions by about 8%, which is like 4.something billion tons per year. And big ticket items include biofuels and alternative proteins. 8% sounds like a lot. Tell us more.
And it's on my team. I think that data is published and it's validated, not by my team only. It's the technology is there. The readiness of the technology is there. The solutions on how to make that path bolder and faster, they are there. Not only on the fuels, on how we transport and move ourselves, but also on the way that we produce and on the goods that we consume, on how we can be producing them more sustainably, how we can minimize waste, which is a big driver of the CO2 emissions, and how we can also contribute to health, improving the way that we eat and taking a better care of ourselves. We also contribute overall on the overall biodiversity and the health of the planet. So the answers are there across all the areas. The speed of penetration, why is it not bolder? I think that's your question. Regulation is a big driver of that. It still takes 6 years in Europe to register a microbe to replace a fertilizer. Still takes in Europe five.
So you're almost treated like chemical solutions.
We are.
Okay.
We are. We are. I mean,
when in fact yours are nature-based solutions.
But we are classified as chemicals. We are.
Okay.
And that means you have to go through a tortuous path of a chemical molecule that's going to stand there forever when you are biological and absorbed by nature. But there is no path for those solutions. And this, I don't want to sound provocative. There is a reason why the regulation is like that. Regulators, they have made the regulation based on the answers that they had available in the past.
Right.
That's what we have it. There's a responsibility for companies to sit at the table with regulators and explain how good can look like, the need of creating a different path. Because it's not only bringing faster the answers of the future and decarbonize and lower CO2 and healthier lives. It's jobs creation. It's wealth.
I think there are other aspects of regulations that you would like. So one is the approval process. Mm-hmm. I think you've also commented on the issue of how we are tracking carbon production?
Okay. From one side, we're spending a significant portion of our GDP, more than what we spend on education, on giving subsidies to fossil base.
Okay.
So we're subsidizing the past. The solutions that we don't like, we're paying tax money to subsidize them, which is a little bit, but it's what we do. Then from another part, when consumers buy, we are asking consumers to choose based on their understanding and their assessment of what would be better for the planet. The hidden cost of the goods that they consume, they are not there. They will pay for that through another route. But that the cost of the CO2 emissions, when you fill up your car with gasoline, you don't pay them in the gasoline, that carbon taxation. You will pay them through CO2 emissions that you will increase your insurance or you'll go on a fire in California. But that's what I mean by the hidden cost.
Right.
The hidden cost of climate change, the hidden cost of CO2 emissions, that's not embedded on the goods that we consume. If you would put that, then it would make a playing field. Give us a path that the consumer will be able to choose in the cost, the real cost of what they buy, and you will see we'll move much faster.
One of the things that was discussed at the last IMD CEO roundtable in November 2024 was the involvement in CEOs in these discussions. One of the guests happened to be a very well-known European minister, and one of the conversations we'd had was you know, how difficult it is for politicians to sway the public opinion. And there was an argument that if the population doesn't trust politicians anymore, hopefully we would need to have more involvement by CEOs, because otherwise, if we don't trust the politicians and we don't hear from the CEOs, well then, you know, we're only going to hear from people who are not necessarily as rational. Is that why you are so involved in a number of activities that are relatively visible and that are public policy shaping?
We all have a responsibility to bring our voice. And as a CEO, of course, you have a responsibility to bring that voice. It's not only running your company, delivering revenue, and ROIC, and of course it's about shareholder value creation, but also sustainable long-term shareholder value creation. And for that, we need to create that paradigm, that framework that we will be able to continue to grow and thrive. And that goes by playing, by co-creating, by dialogue. It's not that CEOs are going to be doing regulation, God bless. I mean, that's not going to happen. We need regulators to do regulation. We need CEOs to sit at the table.
Right.
And explain and speak with regulators so they understand the options. And then hopefully they'll make the decisions with then taking that input in place. That's the framework I'm seeking for. I also believe we need to bring a space for youth in that dialogue. How are we capturing that voice? How are we ensuring that we give hope to youth? Whom do they trust? How they have to have a belief. Can you imagine being young and feeling that there is no future,
right,
that your future is going to be worse than the one of your parents? How are we listening to that voice? We're embedding in on how we work, and we give them hope. So they're part of the answer, and we co-create the answer together.
Yes,
but then
of course.
Help.
Right.
Then also embrace all the stakeholders. Work with NGOs. How are we creating that ecosystem that we create the home for the majority? For the voice of the majority, not the extremes.
Right now, there is a fairly negative attitude in the US towards sustainability-related investments. Do you hope that the situation will change?
I would say what we bring, it is enabling healthier planet and healthier lives. At the same time, it's enabling value for our customers. It's actually been always value for our customers while driving healthier planet and healthier lives. We're growing in US big time.
Okay.
We're investing in US also big time. And we are sustainability. So I would invite you to
change the framing.
Or expand
the
real framing.
Right.
Which is, you are going to be a stronger enabler of the answers of the future.
Right.
What can be not more sustainable than that?
Yeah.
And what can be not more attractive investment than that?
Right.
But how we move it in that framework, that it's the impact that you generate, and that's translated into a better planet and better world. It's
I understand.
It's just the X-ray. It's not, but it's the same outcome.
Yes.
Maybe it's a change of narrative, not on direction.
Yeah. Now, as you know, I study leadership, so I have to ask you a few leadership-related questions. The first one has to do with you being selected, I guess, in 2019, because you started in 2020, as the next CEO of Novozymes. Obviously, you were not Danish.
I'm still not. Yeah.
And you were a chemical engineer, having worked for 25 years, and I don't want to say the enemy, but, you know, not necessarily like... So how much of a shock to the system were you? And also, how much of a shock to the system did you experience?
This felt home since day one. No shock. Because it's maybe a little bit this X-ray. It's what do you want to do? You want to help. You want to help your customer to provide functionality, to bring value-added solutions. And there is a tool for that for chemistry.
Okay.
There's for sure a tool for that for biosolutions. So you've
always been solution-focused and value creation-focused. You just started working with a new
an amazing toolbox.
Okay.
And with an amazing group of individuals it's amazing what we can do here. And maybe also because I'm still not an expert on biotechnology, but I'm not supposed to be. It's the team, the one that brings the answers. I'm just good at making questions, not on giving answers.
And of course, Novozymes was a very international company, but a very international company with a strong Danish, strong Danish roots. Not being Danish, arriving, that was seamless.
Yeah, well, we still Danish, strong Danish roots, and that I think that it's a strength. It's beautiful. This is a beautiful country with an amazing culture and many things to be proud. I have been living in many countries, and I mean, in Asia and in US and in Europe and back in US and in every place I've been, I just thrive. Inputs, differences, and that makes you better and stronger. You just have to embrace and at the same time value where you're coming from.
Hypothetical situation. You and I, a few years ago, did our MBA together at the University of Tarragona.
Mm.
Would I have known or suspected by then that one day you would be the CEO of a very significant company?
I don't know. You'll have to ask my colleagues there and check. I had no clue.
Didn't know?
No.
Okay.
And if I would not have been CEO, that would have been okay too. But I love it, don't get me wrong. I really love the job, but it was not
a lifetime ambition.
No. And I really like it. It's a fun job. But it was not a plan. It was not an objective.
Okay.
No.
Now, let's assume...
I surprised you now.
Let's assume... No. Let's assume that we were indeed studying back then, and then we lost track of one another.
Yeah.
And then we just reconvened recently at an alumni reunion. What remains from the Esther of back then? and what's different?
Much more many wrinkles, for sure. That's different.
In terms of the human being and the leader.
I hope the same.
Okay, nothing's changed.
If you have to change to come to work, man, that must be very hard. Because these are beautiful jobs, but also demanding jobs. Imagine you have to pretend to be somebody else. Poof, that's a lot of energy that you're using that you're not investing on your job.
Fair enough. But it could be investing energy not to pretend to be somewhere else, but to try to be a little bit more this or a little bit more that. For example, some CEOs are naturally impatient, and so over time they kind of work on being a little bit more patient.
Mm. So what would life have made me better, if that's possible? You mean if I improve on anything, what would be the difference? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I think with age, you learn that it's not what you do, it's what the others do.
Okay.
So it is. It's like when you have kids and they eat, you feel like when they start eating, right? They put one spoon in, 10 out. You feel like giving to them because it's going to be much more efficient, but they have to learn how to eat.
Okay.
So that's probably one of the biggest experiences or the biggest learnings through your career, that every time you do less, every time your job, it's more on how you enable others to thrive. And yes, that's a muscle that I learn. through life, and I'm still practicing on how do you make just that contribution that you can have and provide direction, help, and then connect and bring in some. And then how do you make many, many different interfaces align into one direction? That's a muscle that you practice with age.
Is this also one of the things that enables you to have so many hats and activities? So you're the CEO of Novonesis. You're also, as we said, the co-chair of the World Economic Forum's Association of Climate Leaders. You're in an organization called B Corp.
B Team,
co-founded, I think, by Richard Branson, and you're also on the board of the carbon measurement. So you're many activities. How do you maintain yourself productive, sane, and happy? You come across you come across as a very happy person.
Am I?
Yeah.
Okay.
So how do you do that?
It's how you define your job. If your job as a CEO is get everything done, oh man, that's many hours that you need to be just home. If your job as a CEO is how you help your company to be better, then many of things what you do is connect. And for that, you need to get out and sniff and bring those dots home. That's how I think I'm helping. And then surrounding myself by extraordinary people. Our XLT, it's terrific.
Okay.
The SLT is amazing. These are a group of individuals that don't need me. The only thing we do is that together we're stronger than we would be individually, each of us.
So selecting a top team,
yes,
making sure the top team operates at a high level collectively. And then what I'm also hearing is, look, there are a few areas where I believe I can add a lot of value, and I focus as much as possible of my time on these areas.
And also, it's making the role of the CEO, it is to also bring with the strategy of the company. How are you going to do your strategy from an inner, only looking at yourself? And if you only do it based on the inputs that you get in, maybe you put a strategy that puts the company in a direction. You have to link it in the world that you live. That's why you have to be externally connected and also, of course, with a great input from the board.
Do you say no often internally?
Yeah.
I sense that there are more words more words coming after yes.
No, I define often, but I do say no, yes. You have to say no. And it's as valuable as the yes, actually more valuable than the yes. It's very easy to say yes, but a no, a constructive no, a no that you get out from that no stronger with a very good direction of how and why and where to put that energy instead, that's a very powerful no.
One of the things I read recently is you have to say no to this in order to say yes to that.
Exactly. If you say yes to everything, you please, but you drop. Just to be able to say yes, you have is what we said before with the given authority to emerging geographies, we have to take it to somebody else, or just you make chaos and you create bureaucracy and you make roadblocks. So that's why I immediately said yes, I say no. Hopefully I say some yes too.
Last question. You love your job because?
Because it's an amazing place to be, because of the purpose, the people, and the impact we make into the world. And the shareholder value creation too, of course.
Esther, thank you very much for making the time and for your candor and your insights. All the best to you.
My thanks to you. Thank you.
That's all for this week. This podcast was proudly brought to you by the International Institute for Management Development in Lausanne. You can find out more at imd.org.